No.
All
right,
go ahead.
Right now?
All right. You got your show.
And we're back for the second interview episode of Home at Advantage. My name is Sam Herring, and I'm here doing an interview with Ohio State wrestler Johnny DeJulius. Johnny DeJulius is a Cliff Keen Las Vegas champion in 2013. He wrestled for the Ohio State University in 2015 when the Buckeyes won their team title. Four-time NCAA qualifier, and he's a current wrestler on the senior level. Super excited to do this interview. Johnny is a really fun interview, super fun to talk to. Let's just jump right in. How's it going today, Johnny?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on your podcast. I appreciate it. Can't wait to do it.
Yeah, super, super excited. Let's first talk about how we met.
Yeah, so that's a pretty funny story. I was doing clinics with Dylan Palacio kind of all over the country, and I happened to have one in Memphis. Not with you, though. I was down in Bluff City area at Bolton High School, and I tweeted that I was in the area, and some Twitter account with some kid wrestling named Sam Herring hits me back on Twitter, tells me, hey, come to Christian Brothers. And I at the time thought it was maybe your dad with, you know, his son as his profile picture. And I came here and there was 25 kids all lined up ready to learn, and you had put the whole thing together. It was pretty cool. So one, I appreciate that because you've not only set me up with that clinic, but I've been asked back by your coach 4 or 5 times. So it's been pretty fun, you know, that you set that up for us. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm super glad that you've been able to come down to Memphis, though. You run a great clinic. Super exciting, super fun. Just all around an awesome clinic.
Appreciate it, man.
So you run clinics with Dylan, and I know Bryce Meredith is someone. He talks about how he wants to do a clinic or a camp in every state.
Yeah.
Is that one of your goals,
that
too?
Is, yeah. So I've been to 41 states before. I haven't done a clinic in all 41 of those states, but I've visited myself 41 states. And I want to do a clinic in every single state. I've had some cool ones, had clinics in Hawaii, which they have awesome wrestling out there. They're a weird feel because they have so much like judo and jiu-jitsu that when you wrestle them, they have, you know, foot sweeps and arm throws and just different stuff, different feel out there. So that's a lot of fun going out there working with those guys. I've done some clinics in California. Fortunately, I have one in Rhode Island where I've never been this summer. So I'm knocking off one of those states and should be pretty cool.
Number 42, right?
Yeah, exactly. Bryce and me, we both have, you know, obviously wrestling is our passion, but we both have a pretty big passion for traveling as well. You know, if you can have two or multiple passions, we both have a pretty big passion for travel. We've traveled a few places together, actually.
Really? Where'd you travel?
So, actually, you know, me and Bryce decided last year. So, we're pretty adventurous, me and him. And we wanted to run with the bulls in Spain. Have you ever heard of the running of the bull?
I've never heard of it.
So, you probably learned about it in school when you're a little older. But what it is it's a festival in the middle of this city called Pamplona, Spain, called the Fiesta de San Fermín. I don't know what it means. And I don't think Bryce did either. I don't think we cared. But we wanted to run with the bulls. And what they do at that festival is they release 12 bulls down the streets and people run in front of them. It sounds pretty crazy. It's tradition. They do it for like 10 days every single year. Don't do it. Your mom's shaking her head at me right now. but yeah, so, you know, we went to Europe together, made our way down through a few other countries into Spain, and we got into some, you know, some fun trouble along the way. So it was pretty cool.
How'd you get in trouble?
Oh, man. You're going to get me in trouble with your mom. But I'm going to tell you anyways. But so have you ever heard of the Blue Lagoon in Iceland?
No, I have not.
So Iceland is relatively cold, obviously. It's called Iceland, right? And it's pretty far north. It has this place called the Blue Lagoon, which is a natural hot spring. And the Blue Lagoon is pretty big. But what I didn't realize is humans kind of ruined it. I don't want to like diss such a beautiful place, but they made it a spa. They put a man-made bottom in the spring, so it's more like a hot swimming pool now, and they have a huge building around half of the Blue Lagoon that you have to walk through in order to get into it. So they kind of made it like a spa retreat place, right?
Right.
You have to pay money to get in. Now, I have a saying that I live by. that I'm not going to pay money to see the world. If there's the Grand Canyon and it's there, I'm going to walk over there and I'm going to see it. I'm not going to pay some guy who set up a little house right near the Grand Canyon to see what planet Earth is giving me, right? A beautiful view. Right. So I told Bryce that. I said, listen, that's $100 to get into the Blue Lagoon right now. I say we just sneak in, which is a bad idea. So we climb over the, you know, these rocks, and we go. We see this little entrance to the building. It happened to be a service entrance. So we say, you know what? Maybe we'll walk into that little service entrance right there. And we walk in. We're all confident, you know, walking by all these, you know, chefs and other people that work there. And all of a sudden, after like a little getting lost, we had to act real confident. After getting lost a little bit, we find a door that opens up to the actual swimming hole. And we're super excited. There's hundreds of people because it's a huge spa place. Hundreds of people swimming. So we're like, oh, there's no way we'll get caught. There's so many people here, right? So we just get changed right there. There's a locker room, but we didn't have passes to get in because obviously we didn't pay. So we change right there and we jump in. And we're in there for like 20 minutes. Oh, this is great. All of a sudden we look and there's a guy on his walkie-talkie, like security, just talking on his walkie-talkie, pointing over at us. And we're like, uh-oh, that doesn't look good. And we look over to our stuff. All of it's gone. And we're like, oh, crap. What do we do? All of a sudden this guy, this manager-looking guy, comes out in a suit and says, hey, you two, come over here. And we swim over. We're like, oh, hey, how's it going today? It's a nice day out, isn't it? And he looks at us and says, did you guys pay to be here? And we go, about that. And he goes, you guys got to go. And he kind of laughed, which made us feel a little better. And on the way out, he said, this will be a good story for you guys, but, you know, we got to ask you to leave. And, of course, we were in the wrong. We understood. But overall, it was a pretty cool story.
Did you get your stuff back?
We did get our stuff back, so it was good. That's funny. Right. So, moral of the story, don't sneak in anywhere. But if you do, it's a pretty funny story. It's actually funny. So because that, this kind of ties back into wrestling a little bit. Because of that, we wanted to find like a real natural one, right? Not one that was kind of ruined by humans. We wanted to find a natural spring, and they're all over Iceland. So we Google and we research all these places. You know, we have to find the latitude and longitude to figure out where it is. And we find this really small one off in the wilderness somewhere, right? Deep up this like, you know, because there's glaciers. So the glaciers, when they melt a little bit, they start really big rivers, and they're freezing cold. So there's a huge freezing cold river, and there's a small little pocket where it's just steaming water. Right on the side. Super cool. So we hike all the way there, and it probably took us like an hour off the road where we parked to get to wherever this was. We're sitting there, me and Bryce, coolest thing ever, these two high school kids, these Icelandic high school kids, come, and they come there often, and they're sitting there with us, and we're chatting it up. They speak English, and all of a sudden it starts drizzling after about an hour. It starts raining a little bit. And one of the kids goes, hey, you guys got a rental car? And we go, yeah. He goes, would you mind giving me a ride one town over? I don't have a way home. And we go, yeah, I don't care. Of course you can hop in with us. But I ask him, I go, what would you do if we weren't here? And he looks at me and he goes, ah, theta radis. And we go, what? What are you talking about, bro? We started laughing. He goes, oh, theta radis. You never heard that? And I said, no. And he said, what it means is it's an Icelandic phrase. It's on their bumper stickers, their postcards. It's like their motto. It means it's all going to work out. Like whatever happens, you know, it's going to work out. And that was like mine and Bryce's motto for the rest of the trip. You know, oh man, our car broke down in the middle of Paris. Hey, they tarot us. You know, maybe because it broke down, we have to go to the shop. And because we were held back, we meet some people that we end up traveling, you know, down to the south of France with, which is actually a true story. So, you know, we kind of just, it helped us go with the flow a little bit. And obviously, I'm sure you're the same way. Anytime that something happens in the real world, you relate it to wrestling, right?
Right.
Anytime, you know, you listen to music and it's talking about something that's non-wrestling related, you relate it to wrestling somehow.
I
try to relate a lot of things I learn on my travels to wrestling. So being able to go with the flow is super important. You're going to take your losses. You're going to get kicked out of the Blue Lagoon. Your car's going to break down. Your car's going to get flat. In the wrestling world, you're going to take losses. You're going to, you know, miss weight. You shouldn't, but you're going to miss weight. You know, stuff's going to happen that is out of your control. And you can sit there, you can dwell on it, and you can let it ruin your trip. You know, you can let it ruin your career, your season, your day, your tournament, whatever it is. Or you can say, hey, listen, it's going to work out. There's a reason for this. And learn from it. And, you know, I think it's a good outlook. You know, maybe not so free-spirited like the kid who didn't have a ride to his town.
Right.
But, you know, a little piece of that, a little percent of that is good to have. You know, you want to win and learn. You want to lose and learn. And you don't just want to only expect things to go well. You know, so right. It's pretty cool that we got to meet that kid and learn that from him.
That is so cool.
That's fun.
I love hiking and stuff like that. Where you yeah. can walk out in nature and stuff like that.
So. You ever been out of the country at all?
I've been to India. Oh, on a mission wow. trip.
Very cool.
But I've never been anywhere else.
So one of the big things about the wrestling world, Sam, that I wish was a little different was, and I don't want to, like, you know, call out any names, but for the most part, and this is old school wrestlers, but a lot of wrestlers don't have a life off the mat.
Right.
You know, and I think, and that's not a diss, because what that means is they work really hard, which is great. They work super hard. They get to bed on time. They eat the right way, which you should do. However, a lot, what comes with that type of personality is somebody who also probably doesn't do a lot except their sport, right? They only right. wrestle. And I think that holds us back from the popular view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see people like, who's, you know, some famous basketball, football, baseball players. They have personalities. You know, they're right. able to talk to the media. They're able to talk off of the field and have full lives.
Right.
You know, and I wish that wrestlers had that. I think if we were able to have that personality and have, you know, interesting lives off of the mat, we would do better in the popular, you know, sporting world.
Right.
I think that's what Ben Askren does so well.
He does. He does it really well. And then
he's super good at marketing.
What happens when wrestling gets taken away? You're too old or you get hurt or something like that and you can't wrestle anymore.
Yeah, what do you got? Right? Yeah. You got to be able to have some passions off the mat. Wrestling will always be my number one. But because of wrestling, it's kind of given me, you know, I always say you wrestle the way your personality is, right? I try to be pretty, fun and funky. I kind of live my life like that. I try to have fun living life, risky, and, you know, adventurous. So that's important to me. You got to have a life off the mat. But that doesn't mean let it distract you and take you away from wrestling. That's not what I mean, right? There's a good balance. There's a really good balance. That's actually, you know, this is one of my things that I talk about with college kids or high school kids that are going to college. You know, a lot of kids. Yeah, are you interested in wrestling in college?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Absolutely. Well, here's the biggest thing that I always say: don't go somewhere. This is the question you have to ask yourself. I should word it different. When you choose that you're going to go somewhere, ask yourself: if I broke my leg, God forbid, and I could never wrestle again, would I still want to be here? Right?
Right.
No, you don't plan on breaking your leg. No, you don't plan on wrestling not being there. But what that means is you're going to need days off away from the mat. You're mentally just worn out. You're physically just worn out. I just need to get out of my apartment, away from wrestling for a day or two. Right? You're going to have those right. days. Is it in the middle of nowhere? Or is it a place that you actually like? Hey, I really like this place. I feel at home in this place. Right? Maybe the middle of nowhere is somewhere you feel home. Maybe you like the country roads. Or maybe you want somewhere like Northwestern, which is downtown Chicago. Or Maryland, which is right near D.C. Or Columbus, Ohio, which is, you know, bias, my favorite. Right? Downtown cities. You can't have I don't want to say wrestling shouldn't dictate all your choices. It's, you know, I want it to because it's your passion,
right.
But you have to have options off the mat that still keep you sane, you know?
Right.
What are some of your top schools that you like? Not that you're looking at, just that you like watching.
Oh, well, I truly like all of them. I love watching a bunch of different.
Oh, come on. You're going to say the name, aren't you? You're going to say the blue team.
I love Princeton.
Oh, that's not what I expected. Okay.
I love Cornell.
Okay, you like the smart schools.
I do.
There you go. You like Pat Glory?
I do.
He's a stud. Awesome. Vito too, huh? Good guy.
They've got great styles too. Great. Really fun to watch. I do like Ohio State. I like a lot of the Big Ten teams.
You can't not like the Big Ten, huh?
Penn State, Wisconsin, any of those schools, Minnesota. I really just love them all right there. And I hope Maryland makes a comeback because they're a little bit closer.
I think they're going to do pretty well. You know, they just hired a new coach. You know, I love Kerry McCoy. Great guy. I actually almost coached there last year.
Really?
Yeah, I got offered a job by Kerry. Unfortunately, I still had 6 credits left at Ohio State, so I couldn't accept the job until I finished my degree. That's actually one of those state erratas things. How about this? I thought it was the end of the world when I accepted the job and they come up to me and say, hey, even though you're finishing online right now, we can't hire you. I thought it was the end of the world because I thought it was going to be the start of my coaching career, and I was so down. I was so upset about it, and I had to go back to Ohio State. Not I had to. Fortunately, I was able to go back to Ohio State. Right. But I had to go back to Ohio State, and I had to finish those last few credits. A year later, Carrie steps down from being the coach. Mm-hmm. The new coach, Coach Clemson, comes in, and he's going to hire a whole new coaching staff.
Right.
So while I thought it was the end of the world at the time, fast forward, they derided us, you know, it's all going to work out. It actually worked out okay for me. So you never know, maybe because I didn't coach there, where that might have taken me. So which is pretty cool, you know. So it's funny that it all comes back like that. That story
that is funny.
Came back, you know. It's pretty cool. I actually heard The Rock say one time, he said, the thing you want most sometimes is the best thing that never happens to you, right? At the time, right. Maryland was the thing I wanted most. Maybe it was the best thing that never happened to me. Maybe a new coaching job opens up this year. Maybe I start fighting. Maybe, you know, you never know. So it's pretty cool that it works out like that.
Yes, it does. A lot of the time, that's how it works, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So how did you get into wrestling? How long have you been wrestling?
So I started wrestling when I was 5. Pretty hyper as a kid, you know, and I played baseball because my dad was a college baseball player. But baseball practice would wear me out in the summertime, and my parents could, you know, finally get me to sleep at night because I was pretty wound up. But in the wintertime, I didn't have anything to wind me down. Right, I had no practice, no baseball. So my mom suggested that I wrestled. So she took me to my first wrestling practice, and I loved it right away. It was a passion of mine right from the get-go. And I was pretty good at it, you know, just naturally, you know, against other 5-year-olds. So that obviously made it more fun. Unfortunately, when I was 16, she passed away. However, to honor her, because she brought me to my first wrestling practice, I got her signature of her name tattooed on the arm that they actually raise when we win wrestling matches. So it was pretty cool that she was able to take me there, and she was able to be such an influential part on something that's such a big part of my life.
Right. And yeah. Ironically, it's Mother's Day today.
It is Mother's Day, yeah. That's so funny. Shout out to the moms.
So you played baseball in the spring and summer, mm-hmm. and wrestled in the fall and winter. How did you compare those sports? Which one did you value more? What did you spend most time thinking about, or which one did you love the most?
You know, I find value in any... That's a good question, like value. I love the word value. I find value in anything that someone does that's a passion to them. So I don't want to say wrestling's better than baseball. That's obviously going to be a biased thing that I think, right? I love baseball. My dad loved baseball. My dad played in college. I loved it because I was a fan of the sport. I wasn't very good. You know, I was a decent shortstop, good infielder, but I wasn't the greatest ball player. But I was a pretty good wrestler, so that was my passion. But I was a big fan of baseball. However, when I was about in 8th grade, I stopped playing baseball and focused on wrestling full-time. I was wrestling year-round for the past couple years, you know, in junior high. However, once I got into high school, I decided, you know, after 8th grade was over, I was only going to wrestle. And that's what I stuck with, you know, obviously till now.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And we talked about being a fan of the sport as a way to love your sport, whatever that may be, on an earlier podcast on how to create love for the sport. So that's interesting that you talk about that's how you love baseball. It's
because you talked about that in an earlier podcast?
We did.
Oh, wow.
So that is interesting. And so I'm assuming you were pretty successful early on because that's kind of what got you to have a great passion for
wrestling. Yeah, and, you know, I want to emphasize results, you know, shouldn't dictate the reason that you do something. You know, if you love being an actor, even if you suck at acting, guess what you should do?
Act.
You should be an actor, right?
Right.
If you love singing, even if you suck at singing, you should be a singer. And you shouldn't let other people, oh, psh, what's he think he's doing? He's an actor now. You shouldn't let them, you know, make fun of what you do. Here's my thing. I have the saying that I like. If you follow what you love, you know, money can find you. And what that means is, if you follow money, passion doesn't always find you. If I tell you to dig holes every day for $100,000, are you going to love the check? Of course.
I'm going to love the check.
Right. But will you ever fall in love with digging holes?
No.
No. So you'll follow the check. That'll be great. But you'll never fall in love with digging holes. However, if you follow your love, hey, maybe I love playing the guitar. I love it. All of a sudden, you get good enough. Hey, this bar asks you to play every Friday night. And you start making a little bit of money. All of a sudden, you get a little bit more exposure. A few other restaurants want you to go play live at their, you know, their nightlife. You know, and if you follow what you love, maybe money finds you. So I think that that is a happier lifestyle to me, more than just, you know, following a check and maybe making more money. So I follow wrestling. That's my passion. That's my love. And I really at my clinics, I don't push loving wrestling. I push following what you love. Period. I'm the first thing I say at clinics is, hey, if you don't love it, you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. Nobody should judge you. Nobody will judge you. I don't think you're any less you if you don't love wrestling. Fortunately, right. me and you both do, right?
Yes, we do.
But I say follow what you love. You know, follow your passion. Money will find that. Money will find your passion. So that's important to me. And that's cool that you guys talked about that in an earlier podcast. That's something I really value a lot. Just following what you love, doing what you love.
Just kind of like what can you offer people instead of kind of what you can get from your job is kind of, so if you have a passion for playing the guitar, that's what you can offer people instead of going to dig holes because that's what you can
get. Right. No, very true. That's a great point. You know, but it's like Tom Ryan always said this to me. He said, do what you love and get paid to do it. You know, that's the best thing ever. Do what you love, get paid to do it.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. So, you know, there's more money in wrestling now than ever before, which is awesome. Which is awesome. A lot of people, you know, they say, oh, give back. I agree, giving back is a very selfless thing to do. However, what people mean by give back, a lot of wrestling people, they say, oh, give back in the sense, and they say this to Flow Wrestling a lot, and this makes me mad. They think Flow should be free, right? Oh, it's so expensive. It's so expensive. Give back to the sport. If you want to give back to a sport, you know what you should do? You should get money involved in the sport.
In the sport, right.
That's giving back because that's growing the sport. And now someone like Kyle Snyder, someone like Logan Stieber, someone like you know, these coaches that want to coach at big schools, they can make a full living in the sport. Someone like Nomad, someone like CP, those guys can make a full living as a wrestling journalist. You know, and that's the best thing ever. They're doing what they love,
right.
And they're getting paid to do it now.
And Flo can't do what Flo does if it's free.
No, because they'd have to go be an insurance salesman 90% of the day, and then the other 10% of the day, they'll quickly jot down a small little article that they're not getting paid for, and it wouldn't be all of their effort and time and invested into it.
Right.
You know, so that's a big, important thing. What do you want to do? You want to be a journalist about wrestling one day? Media? You're already a media personality.
I was thinking maybe something part-time, but
yeah,
honestly, I want to be a real estate investor.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. How far do you want to go in wrestling, though? Would you want to wrestle post-college?
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely.
As far as it can take you?
As far as I can go in wrestling, as good as I can be. I want to be like Kyle Snyder. He says he wants to wrestle until he's 37.
That's awesome, right?
I want to wrestle as long as I possibly can.
When did you start?
I started when I was 6.
Oh, we're right around the same age. Yeah. Okay.
And Eli started when he was 4. We both started at the same time. And my dad wrestled at Air Force.
Yeah, that's right. You told me that.
That's how we knew about the sport. And when we heard there was a club up here, my dad was like, all right, I got to get my kids.
So you were born in Memphis?
I was born in Memphis.
Yeah.
But
so your dad was like my mom. He got you into it.
Right.
Very cool.
For sure.
But mom brings you all the stuff, right?
She does. My dad works a lot, so sometimes he didn't have the chance to come. But when he does, he always comes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you fell in love with it right away, or did he have to drag you to practice for the first few years?
Well, I was 6, so I really didn't understand everything. I loved it. I was having fun, but I really didn't understand true love, true passion.
Yeah, you were just doing it at the time.
I was just doing it, and I enjoyed it. It was playing games the whole time and everything.
Exactly.
So I kept coming. It was fun to do it. Everything I did at that age was fun.
Yeah.
But as
that's
I
the best,
to get
right?
Older,
you can just sit in the backyard and pick grass, and it's fun.
And it's fun. Right? That is the best. As I got older, and I grew understanding for the sport and how far it can take you, I developed a deeper and deeper love, and then
never lose that fun part of it, though.
Yeah.
I see that a lot. Like you're young right now, but I see that a lot with high school kids. They do it because it's fun at first. Then all of a sudden, they get good. And because they're in high school and they're good and they have a reputation, they start to protect. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't want people to protect. I want you people to remember, hey, I do this because it's fun. You know, this big crowd, everybody, you know, picking me to win, picking me to lose. That's added stress, right? Mm-hmm. That's added nerves. But I do this because it's fun, first and foremost. I love doing it. I do it because it's fun. And whenever I tell myself that, it kind of calms me down when I start to get really nervous. So that's good that you have that. It's good that you think like that. Hey, this is fun. I love it, and it's fun. That's important.
I definitely love every aspect of wrestling. And, again, I want to be doing it
as long as I can. You like weight
cutting? Well, this is going to sound really weird. This year, I did pretty much no weight cutting. I just said I wanted to. I normally gain 5 pounds every year, and I was like, this year, 10 pounds.
Oh.
And so I tried to gain 10 pounds. I was not super successful.
What are you at?
But I'm at about 80 pounds now. And yeah. I wrestled 70 last year, but I was about 73 wrestling 70 last year.
Cutting a little bit.
And so this year, I've been weighing 79-80, wrestling 80. And
have you lost any success because of that? Like, have you because you're not cutting weight, have you given up a little bit of an advantage?
For sure, some matches and some tournaments, I've kind of realized that I was much smaller than this guy, and that hurt me a lot. I didn't have the same strength and my technique
naturally
wasn't that perfect.
But yeah, that's a good that's a catalyst for starting your technique then.
Right,
that's
and
good.
And it played a role in some of the results in the matches, but I didn't get hurt because of it or anything negative. I mean, losing is not fun.
Never fun, yeah.
It was fine. I was ready for it. But Eli didn't do the 10-pound thing. And so when he was on a diet or something, I was pigging out eating food. I was like, I kind of actually missed that challenge.
You know, there is a good value to cutting weight. Obviously, there's unhealthy ways, and people cut corners. They starve themselves. You know, stuff like that does worry some moms and some parents. That's never good. But I also do see the value in, when you're older, staying in on a Friday night when everybody's going out partying, because you got to cut weight. You know, everybody's eating pizza. You can't, because you got to cut weight, right? You're going to bed at 10 o'clock at night because you're just miserable and you want to get some sleep because it just sucks, you know, as opposed to staying up till 3 a.m., right? So there are some things where it does force you to live a decent lifestyle.
Right.
A lot of people want to get rid of cutting weight, though. I don't know if I want that. I think it makes people a little tougher. There's something about running on an empty stomach. When you gotta go work out, it's not easy to do.
And when the weight cutting is like that, and you're dieting, and you're eating healthy, and you're running and stuff, but if you're in a sauna suit and you don't eat and you don't drink or anything like that, that's the kind of part that I think people want to get out of wrestling.
They definitely want to get the unhealthy parts out, the starving yourself, for sure.
But
mat side weigh-ins, though, would eliminate cutting weight totally. And I don't want that. Right. I don't want, you know, everybody's always going to look for an advantage, right? Everybody's always going to look for an advantage. But I think mat side weigh-ins, you know what I think it would do worse?
What would that do?
I think it would make people cut weight anyways, weigh in, and wrestle on an empty stomach. All of a sudden, thousands of fans are watching somebody give 50% of their effort. Because they can't, they don't have the energy to give that much. People are always going to cut weight. They're always going to find shortcuts. They're always going to try. That's human nature, shortcut to success. Hey, if I cut weight, maybe I'll win states. We've heard people talk like that, right? So I think it would be less exciting bouts for the fans. That's what I'm about. I want to grow the sport so much that random people walking by look in and say, wow, that looks pretty cool. And the only way to get to that is full crazy super energy with people risking throwing the kitchen sink at each other, putting up 20 points a match. Obviously, that's a perfect world. Never gonna happen every match like that, but that's what's gonna sell our sport,
right?
You know,
yeah. And I think the mat side weigh-ins would hurt. I mean, teams would, especially in college, would have to have their wrestlers cut weight. For example, Brady Berge this year for Penn State, he had no option. Penn State really didn't have a great option at 149, and so they had to have Brady Berge cut down. And what were they going to do if it was Matt Tidwayans? They'd still cut him down.
They would still cut him down. They would have to. There's no other option.
It would
You're
just
100%
be
right.
That much more boring and that much less fun for wrestling.
Penn State, you know, I hate to say it, they're a pretty fun team to watch, huh?
They are pretty fun.
Yeah, that's one of our rivals. I actually wrestled a guy named Jimmy Gulliban. Six times in 2 years. Six times in 2 years.
It was that in college?
Yeah, all in college. A lot of times.
How did you wrestle him so many times? I mean,
so I wrestled him.
Big Tens.
So I got him. I got him in the duel twice. I wrestled him once at twice at Big Tens.
You dueled twice?
We dueled, yeah, because it was 2 years. So we dueled the first year, dueled the second year. Okay. Big Ten's first year, Big Ten's second year. I never wrestled him in NCAAs, but I wrestled him twice in freestyle in those same years.
Oh.
Right? So at Akron U23s. So we wrestled six times in two years. Pretty crazy. So that's how the Big Ten is, though. Especially when it's, you know, those top four or five guys in that weight, they all wrestle a bunch of times, knocking each other around. I wrestled Zane Richards three times. I wrestled Corey Clark four or five times. I wrestled Eric Montoya three times. You know, it's just the same people knocking each other around. Rossi Bruno, All-American for the team up north. You know who the team up north is?
The M-word.
The M-word, Michigan. Yeah. So I wrestled him four times in college, right? So it's, you know, obviously I hated it at the time because, you know, you're wrestling the same guys. But you do find, you know, a love for that. Just, you know, you appreciate that you got to battle these rivals so much, and it's pretty cool that you knocked each other around so much. So it's fun.
So, when did you realize you wanted to wrestle for Ohio State?
When I could walk.
When you could walk?
Yeah, right away. I'm from Ohio, man.
did the coaches at Ohio recruit you, or were you just like, I'm going?
I was pretty recruited by Tom Ryan. You know, we actually built a good relationship as family friends too, and I remember. I was a junior in high school, maybe a sophomore in high school. I got to think how old I was. I was 16. So I was a sophomore in high school. I just won my first state title. And I remember Logan verbaled there, Logan Stieber. I remember Hunter Stieber verbaled there shortly after. I remember a really good guy by the name of Cam Tesari, who was also a four-time state champ in the state of Ohio, verbaled there. So at the time, they were getting all these big-name recruits. A guy named Andrew Campolitano, four-time state champ from New Jersey. A guy named Kenny Kortz, who eventually became an All-American at Ohio State. He verbaled there. All in the same, you know, couple months. So while they're recruiting me and they're getting all these big-name recruits, I'm getting excited like, holy cow, maybe we can start something special at Ohio State. So I ended up verbaling. I became a part of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Fast forward 4 years later, we ended up winning the first ever NCAA title for Ohio State. That was pretty cool. I think there's only been like 10 to 12 teams that ever win the NCAAs. That's a crazy stat.
That is weird.
Only 12 out of hundreds of years, 100 years.
I feel like in any other sport, it'd be
right. Yeah, basketball. Years, 50, yeah,
50 different teams.
Exactly. It's crazy. You know, Oklahoma State and Iowa have so many. I think Iowa State has quite a bit themselves.
They do.
Michigan State and Arizona State have a pair, or maybe three or four for them. And you know, just a couple other teams. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. But
Penn State now is 8. Oh,
I forgot about them. I forgot about those guys. Oh, yeah.
Bet you would, though.
Yeah.
What do you think appealed to you or appealed to the Ohio State staff about you, about your wrestling?
Well, I'm an Ohio guy, you know, Ohio native. I had a couple at the time, a former Walsh Jesuit where I went. A Walsh Jesuit wrestler was on staff at Ohio State when I originally verbaled Joe Heskett. So, you know, he had a nice little pipeline coming from Walsh. We had two other Walsh guys that were older than me, Mike Pusilla, who won the Nationals at Ohio State, and David Rella. They both went there. So what appealed, you know, I think I was pretty successful in high school, and they thought that they could see me as, you know, a potential starter and potential All-American for Ohio State, so which was pretty cool. And, you know, I don't think I would trade that for anything. You know, would if I could do it all over again, I'd be a Buckeye. Always.
So you said you had a pretty successful high school career. What did that look like? What big tournaments did you go to?
So Walsh was fortunate. We were able to go to a lot of big tournaments. We hosted the Ironman. That was at our school.
Right. When did that start? Was that way before you?
I think early 90s.
Okay.
Early 90s, yeah. So Walsh Jesuit was like a powerhouse in the 90s. We were like Blair Academy. We won nationals like 5 years in a row. We were really good. While I was in high school, we were second in the state. We lost to Graham. But you know, we went to Ironman every year. We went to Cheesehead. We went to Powerade. We went to the Brecksville tournaments, relatively big in the state of Ohio. Ohio just has some good teams. We dueled St. Ed's every year, top 10 in the country every year. We dueled St. Paris Graham. They're top 10 in the country every year, you know, a couple time champs. We dueled some really good teams. We actually dueled Blair. We went all the way out to Pennsylvania and dueled schools like Easton, Pennsylvania, you know, right, where Jordan Oliver
they
went.
They were really good at that
time.
Yeah,
very
too.
Good. So, you know, it was cool. You know what the benefit of that, too, is state tournament was the easiest tournament of my year. just because I had so many tough tournaments, you know. So right. That was pretty cool. I was mentally prepared for the nerves that the state tournament was going to bring. Mm-hmm. So that's the benefit of having a pretty tough schedule. I think that's also the benefit of having a Big Ten schedule. You know, if you're every weekend having to game up for somebody, you know, you don't have some guy from Appalachian State, you know, on a Friday I have a guy from Iowa, and then all of a sudden on Sunday I have a guy from Penn State, then next week I have a guy from Minnesota, and then the next week I have a guy from, you know, Michigan. It gets tough. You can get stuck in that, you know, low self-esteem state if you're not doing well, but it also builds a lot. Right. It builds a lot of character.
So talking about nerves, what match do you think you're most nervous for in your whole career?
You know what's funny? I think that this is my theory. I think people get more nervous for matches that they're supposed to win than matches that they think they can't win. If I have a wrestler that I'm about to wrestle that maybe is a multiple-time national champ, I have no fear. I can wrestle completely free. If I have somebody that – yeah. If I have – yeah, I'm supposed to lose.
I'll go out there.
Yeah. But if I have somebody that I'm like a notch better than, that maybe I've beaten once by a point or beaten once by a couple points, mm-hmm. that's nervous. Oh, man, what if he's better than me today? Right? And you start asking yourself that. And that's what wrestlers are scared to admit. That guy is better than me today. We don't want to admit that. That's why you hear a lot of people say, oh, I had a bad weight cut after they lose, right? Or, oh, I had that. You know, it's I don't want to call them excuses. They just don't want to tell themselves that they weren't good enough, you know? So the matches I got most nervous for were guys that were not big names. Like a guy named from Kent State named Mac McGuire. I wrestled him 5 times in college. I never scored a single takedown on Mac McGuire in 5 matches. Guess what my record is?
5-0.
Right? Like I just won the most fluky ways. I reversed him at the end of the period, or I turned him when I was on top, or I rode him out. Just the dumbest ways. And those matches, you know, I'm obviously have grown. My mentality has grown since then. But those matches got me nervous. Oh, man. You know, what if I lose? I'm not supposed to lose this guy. I just beat so-and-so last week. He was an All-American. What if I lose to this guy? Right? And I was fortunate enough to be around people like Kyle Snyder, Miles Martin, Nate Tomasello, who talked to me and worked with me out of getting out of that mental funk. And no matter who it is, just being able to wrestle free. You know, I don't believe people when they say they're fearless. Right? I jump out of planes. Nobody's fearless. I get scared of a lot of things. And I jump off buildings, right? It's the more bad dude, the baddest dude in the room, isn't the guy that has no fear. The guy that has no fear is the most naive dude in the room.
Right.
The baddest dude in the room is the guy who has overwhelming fear and still jumps out of the plane anyways, right? And still courage. Steps on the mat anyways. You can't be brave unless you're scared.
Right.
Right? You can't be brave unless you're scared. So I think that's the baddest dude. If I'm overwhelmed with fear and I don't only conquer my fear by competing, I also am able to be free and my 100% full self the whole time, I think that's the ultimate goal. You know, so I had to overcome those fears of losing to a no-name, you know, for lack of a better term. Just focusing on what's in front of me. You know, I control what I can. I can't control his name. I can't control his record. I can't control who's in his corner. I can't control how big the crowd is. I can't control how he feels, if he had a good weight cut, if he had a bad weight cut. I can't control that stuff. I can't control, though, how excited I am going into the match. I can't control my weight cut. I can't control how many shots I take. I can control a lot of stuff like that. And if I put all my effort and focus on those things – sorry. If I put all my effort and focus on those things, my results will usually take care of themselves, you know? And if I did come out, you know, with the loss, then at least I gave my full everything. And I can say, hey, you know what? He was better than me today. And I'm okay with saying that if that happened to be the case.
That makes sense. That's something that interests me on how different people handle their nerves. Like I know some people have the coaches talk them down and calm them down.
Right.
And some people have them excite them and slap them around and get them ready to go. And
DeSanto.
Confidence and stuff. DeSanto was funny. When I went to Big Tens, that was one of the first everybody in the room is a really high-level wrestler.
Everybody.
Everybody in the room.
Everybody cheers for someone getting inside ties, right? They just understand the struggle. It's pretty cool.
And when I went there, I saw DeSanto jumping around, and I saw Tom Brands just slapping him.
Slapping him.
And I.
What other sport are you allowed to slap your opponent? Your athlete.
They would
Right? Could you imagine a football coach if Urban Meyer slapped his athlete? He'd be fired.
He'd be fired right away.
We applaud it. We love it. Let's go.
It's so interesting. I mean, wrestling's kind of in its own bubble of the different strategies. What do you call it? Traditions.
Yes.
In the sport, that's
good
so
word.
Much different from other sports. It's very interesting. But anyway, when I was there, just watching the different. Warming up styles. You see Descent over there sprinting before his match.
Right.
Down
so another person might be laying down.
Right.
Right. You just so say, you know, people are different. That's a good point because what Travell Delagnev, who's my RTC coach at Ohio State right now, he preaches. He thinks sometimes someone who's very, very successful as a coach, as an athlete, as a coach, often it makes them say, this is how I did it. This is how it has to be done.
Right.
Which is false. It should be. Now, to follow in somebody's footsteps is not wrong. You know, hey,
right.
this guy goes to bed on time. Should I do that? Of course, right?
Of course.
But there also has to be a sense of, hey, this is how I did it. You're different. Let's figure this out together. Right? There has to be a sense of that. And what Travell does, which is better than anybody I've ever met, is he finds what you need. If you need to, you know, if you get really nervous and he needs to tell a joke before a match, he'll make you laugh. If you know, he needs to he just finds ways to be your free, full self, which is really interesting. And he goes at different approaches with different athletes. I actually saw a list on his phone with names and what they need and how what motivates them, which is pretty cool for somebody to take that much time and put into somebody, their athletes.
And it's exciting, too, when you have a coach that
cares
spends
that
much time
to
focus on how good you can be.
Very, very cool.
It's exciting. And I love that. If you could describe Travell Delagnev in just one sentence.
Goofball. No, he's an awesome guy. What he does, which I think his biggest asset is, you know, obviously he's a great wrestler. He was fifth in Rio. Awesome wrestler several times. I think he was bronze medal in one of the world championships. Actually, this is a great stat about Travell. Every single senior level tournament he ever competed in, whether it was the World Championships, the Olympic Games, you know, he's competed in two Olympics, the Olympic Games, the World Championships, overseas tournaments that happened to be really hard, Euriga and stuff like that, he never, ever, ever placed lower than fifth. He was fifth or higher every single tournament. That's unbelievable.
That's really impressive because you see guys Snyder didn't place at the Euriga.
Correct.
And Burroughs didn't
place
at
the
Olympics.
Correct.
I mean, guys that can produce that kind of consistency. And that's something I wanted to ask you. Have you ever competed overseas, and is there any difference?
Yeah, competed in Cuba last year. I wrestled in the Cerro Pelado in Havana, Cuba. To say different is an understatement. Check this out. If you have any little idiosyncrasies, well, you know, that word means little things you have to have.
Habits.
Rituals. Get rid of them, right? Why do we have rituals? Think about that. Why do we have rituals? We have rituals, in my opinion.
Confidence, comfort.
Confidence, comfort. If I use these baseball gloves, these little batting gloves, and I got a hit last time, oh, it must be the gloves, right?
Right.
We want to try to control winning. You can't.
Right.
You cannot control winning. The hardest guy, working guy in the room, sometimes loses. The laziest guy in the room, who's just God-given talent, sometimes wins, right? The only thing you can control is how good you personally can be.
Right.
Hey, what's my ceiling, right? So we try to control winning by, hey, if I tap my headgear four times and then I fix my left sock, then I fix my – you have all these rituals. We think we can control the outcome. You can't. You got to get rid of them. You know why? Because overseas in Cuba – I mean, there was it eliminated things for me. A lot of things I needed. I needed a treadmill. That was just how I cut weight. I couldn't find a treadmill for miles. The place that they wrestled in was an outdoor, you know, facility with mats that looked like they haven't been mopped in years. That was just how broken windows. I mean, it was, you know, the wrestlers were walking around barefoot. It just was a culture shock. I couldn't check my weight until weigh-ins for 4 days. I couldn't check my weight. They did not have the money to have an extra check scale. They only had the actual official weighing scale, and you can't, you know, check your weight on that one. So I had to gauge it off of how I felt from doing all this weight cutting for years. I had to gauge about what 134 was. I was so nervous, Sam, going up to there, because I was running up until weigh-ins because I just didn't know how close I was. It was crazy.
Did you end up being way under?
I was actually about a half pound under. So, wow. Yeah. So I mean, I kind of know what my body is at 134. I've been there enough times where I know when I'm there.
Right.
But yeah, it was different. You know, it was different. You got to get those rituals out of your head. You're not going to get the treadmill that you need that you cut weight on every single time. You just got to be tough. Tate Rodas, it's all going to work out, right?
Right.
So.
Well, if you had to describe Tom Ryan in one sentence, how would you do that?
The most caring person I've ever met. Like, sincerely, the most caring person I've ever met. I actually didn't get to say Travell's. Travell's best asset, I'll go back to Tom in a second. Travell's best asset is he can dissect things better than anybody I've ever seen. A lot of times I see technique and I say, oh, that's a good shot. But what he does is he sees how far that shot could go and how many different how it spiderwebs into different timelines. Oh, if he does this, that happens. If he does this, right. That happens. If the guy reacts that way, it branches off. So he's very good at seeing all those different branches that could come about. And he can dissect the way people are thinking so well. And he's so good at seeing all this philosophical thoughts about wrestling. Tom... He just cares so much. I mean, if you said, hey, I need you to pick 20 flowers before every single dual meet 3 hours away because that's just one of my habits that I have, guess what he'll do? He'll go 3 hours away, he'll pick 20 flowers, and he'll give them to you before you wrestle. I mean, he's just that type of person. You know, he loves his wrestlers, he loves his athletes, and he puts a lot of time into them. So it was an honor wrestling for both those guys. It was awesome.
That is so cool.
Yeah, come to Ohio State, bro. You're gonna be good one day when you're in college, when you're in high school.
That everything just talking about that college wrestling and the college coaches, everything you get to do in college, just wrestling every day in a room. I mean, that just excites me.
Yeah,
that excites me so much.
You're pretty smart though too. You'll probably like being able to balance school and wrestling. You know, it's cool. Sometimes if I didn't have class. Or I did the bad thing and I didn't go one of those, you know, once in a while. I felt lazier than I did when I had a lot on my plate. Does that make sense? Like sometimes if I have nothing to do, I don't get anything done. And you think that if you have nothing to do, you'll get a lot done. So it's almost like when I had to balance wrestling and school and tutors and all this stuff,
right.
I actually got more done in my day, even if someone gave me extra stuff to do, just because I was able to manage my time well. So that was you know, it's cool, the college lifestyle. It's different.
I totally understand that. That happens to me a lot, especially because I'm homeschooled. I'll have different assignments for different days and stuff like that.
Oh, you can't skip school.
So, yeah, I can't skip school. So I'll have different – some days where I just have nothing to do. Those few things that I actually do have to do, I end up not getting them done.
Exactly. If you want something done, give it to a busy man, right?
Right.
That's how it is. That's interesting.
So – you're big into skydiving.
I am.
Tell me about how you got started in skydiving and just kind of how that's branched out into one of your biggest passions.
That's funny. My mom actually went tandem when I was young, and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. I was like, you went tandem skydiving? Tandem means you're strapped to somebody else, right? There's a professional who has the parachute. You have a harness that connects to his harness, and you guys jump together, so he basically takes you for the ride.
I've actually seen Kyle Snyder do that.
Yes, so Kyle went tandem, correct. Seen a video of him. So, I thought it was the coolest thing, and I've actually never, so I'm 26 years old, I've never drank alcohol in my entire life. I've never had a sip of alcohol. I've also never, obviously, done any drugs or anything like that illegally. I've, you know, taken Advil, right? I've drank caffeine, but I've never done illegal drugs or smoked anything ever, no cigarettes. I've never done anything like that in my entire life. So, because of that, when I was 18... I didn't really know what I was going to do. I was like, oh, it's my 18th birthday. You know, I'm allowed to buy lottery tickets if I wanted to, which I would never do. I'm allowed to buy cigarettes, right? I didn't do any of that stuff. I didn't party. Mm-hmm. So when I was 18, I said, you know what? I'm allowed to skydive. Maybe I'll try that. My mom did it. I'll do it. So my dad brings me to the skydiving center when I was 18, July 10th, 2010. I was 18 on July 5th. July 10th, 2010, 5 days later, we go up to this place called Air Ohio. I jump out of a plane for the first time, loved it. I go back that year, within a couple months, I do two more. So I have three tandems under my belt. This guy comes up to me and goes, bro, you're wasting your money. Take the class, get your license. How it works is you have to do 25 jumps. You're alone all 25 jumps, but you take a class and two instructors, you have your own parachute. They're not strapped to you anymore, but they hang on to you during free fall to keep you stable. And then they break off at when you pull your parachute. Then there's a walkie-talkie in your ear, and they talk you how to, you know, fly down. So a six-hour class saves your life, and you you start learning in progression how to fly your body. All of a sudden, jump three or four, the instructors let go of you. You have to get stable on your own. You know, jump five or six, hey, you have to do some 360 turns. Jump seven, eight, you have to do some forward somersaults, backward flips, right?
Right.
And in progression, you know, by jump 25, you learn how to fly your body. So that following year, did all 25 of my jumps. I got my A license at jump 25. And now fast forward, you know, 259 jumps later, I am a B or C license skydiving coach. So it's pretty cool. And it's funny, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you have a passion for wrestling and skydiving, but I see them so much similarities, so much more than, right, than people think. Like, when I'm about to wrestle and I get really nervous that something's going to go wrong, I got to trust my what? I trust my training.
Right.
Hey, you know, it's easy to say.
What's that?
It's easy to say, oh, I'll win the Olympics one day. Yeah, I will do that. Because we're sitting here and there's no stress yet, right?
Right.
All of a sudden, you're wrestling a guy that's pretty good in the state finals. Stress is introduced. Discomfort's introduced. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh man, what if I get tired? Oh, what if my shots just don't work? What if I can't ride them, right? So when that stress happens of all the what ifs go wrong, I like to think, well, you know what? What if I get tired? I train pretty hard. Probably shouldn't get tired. I work out a lot, right?
Right.
You know, hey, what if your high crotch doesn't work? Well, you know what? I shoot a lot of them at practice. I have a pretty good high crotch. It probably should work, right? And you start calming yourself down that way. It's the same way with skydiving. I see so many similarities. Holy cow, what if something goes wrong? What if my parachute doesn't open? What if, you know, I roll my ankle as I'm you know, landing? What if, you know, all this? What if I screw up my dive flow and I'm not stable? You start trusting your training. You start trusting your parachute. Oh, I trust the gear. Hey, you know, I packed my parachute. I did it the right way. It probably should work. And it's just cool how there's just such an out of control thing that you just have to have faith in.
Right.
And I know it sounds insane. You're jumping out of a plane. It is safer than you think, though. I promise.
Yeah, and I mentioned my dad was at the Air Force, so he tells me a lot.
Did he have any jumps? Military jumps?
He had a lot of them.
Sweet.
But I don't think any of them on duty or whatever. I think there are just a lot of them in Colorado Springs just flying around. He sees people jumping out of planes. He's like, I want to do that. So I think
he... Oh, so he did fun jumps.
I think so.
Oh, very cool.
At the military.
That's very cool. I didn't realize that.
So that is something that I think would be really fun.
Bucket list.
Yeah,
sweet. Bucket list. Very cool. Anything else? Are you adventurous at all? Do you want to travel one day?
Yeah, I love travel. I love everywhere I go. I like to... I mentioned hiking. I really love hiking.
Yeah. There's some pretty cool hikes in America. Have you ever heard of Havasu Falls?
No, I have not.
So you got to look that up after we're done with this podcast. Okay. Havasu Falls is one of my favorite hikes I've ever done.
Where is it?
It's in Arizona. You have to have a permit. It's about a 10-mile hike there. You camp there for the night. You hike back. Because of wrestling, just my personality. You know, I attribute a lot of parts of my personality to wrestling. You know, just through people I've met, stuff like that. My personality in wrestling seeped into my real world. I always talk about the word identity.
Right.
I don't identify based on losses or wins. A lot of people introduce each other based on accolades, right? Like, right. Oh, he's a state champ. We always talk like that. Oh, LeBron won 3 rings. Jordan's won 6 rings, right? We always value people based on accolades. Oh, Jordan must be better. I disagree with that, in my opinion. I value people based on their choices leading up to that accolade. For example, if you're wrestling right now in the room and you're wrestling your brother Eli, let's say. Let's say you're winning 2-1. You got a takedown, he got an escape, and it's a 3-minute go. Let's just pretend. There's a minute left. You could risk and shoot 4 more times in that minute probably, right?
Right.
You could risk. you might give up a takedown and he could win 3-2. If you lose, let's just say if you lose, the loss stays in the room. It doesn't come home with you. Mm-hmm. But what does come home with you is that choice to risk. You become a risk taker now in your real world, right? In your personality, you have that risk trait now. Hey, I'm able to risk in an uncomfortable situation. I have that ability, right? Or if you – but if you didn't risk, if you decided just to sit there and hand fight it out and you win 2-1, all of a sudden, guess what happens? You leave here. You're not going to be a risk taker. You're not going to be somebody who goes up and asks the girl out, right? You're not going to be a risk taker. You're going to be scared of failure, and you're not going to take the risks. So I think that stuff is very, very important. Another example would be maybe you're wrestling somebody, and you're dead tired at practice. All of a sudden, another person asks you to go who's really, really good, and you're kind of thinking, dang, I kind of want to go with that kid over there because he's not as good, and I'll get to catch my breath. So your choice now of do I seek discomfort? Or do I avoid discomfort? That'll become a part of your personality.
Right.
You'll go home with that, whether you do or don't. The loss or the win won't come home with you. So all these different things that the ways I wrestled, you know, risking and seeking discomfort and all this stuff, it seeped into my personality and it made me who I am a lot. That led to those adventurous skydiving, hiking stuff in the real world, which I think is pretty cool. I don't think if I ever wrestled, I would have a passion for skydiving. I don't think if I ever wrestled, I would have a passion for hiking or the outdoors and stuff like that. So I give a lot of credit to wrestling, and I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So how many times have you been overseas?
I've been to 30 countries.
30 countries?
Yes. I could try and list them all, but I've only done 5 international tournaments, and only one of them was out of the United States.
Okay. International, only one of them was out of...
Because I've had Dave Schultz's international, Bill Farrell's international, okay. And I've done Dave Schultz twice, Bill Farrell once, and I think there's one more I'm forgetting. I got to remember. But go ahead, sorry.
So, every time you go overseas to wrestle... have you tried to go hiking or something with somebody?
You know, I didn't get the chance to in Cuba. Just because I didn't have a car and I couldn't rent one at the time. But, anytime I go anywhere, I try to make the most of it. I try to do something different anywhere I am that you can't do in Ohio where I live. You know, I see a lot of people my age, they go to Mexico, which is a beautiful country, but what do? They sit at the resort the whole time.
Right.
And every waiter and waitress and every worker speaks English. Right?
Right.
I know that, you know, you're in a foreign country. It might be dangerous. It might be this. Listen, get off the resort and go see something beautiful 10 miles away. Something that is not in America. Because right. There's something. There's whether it's a cave with a great little, you know, swimming hole or a crazy view and a hike up the side of a cliff that you just get a view that you can't pass up. There's everywhere. And I just wish people would get out of their comfort zone of everybody speaking English and go see something that you can't do back at home. That's important to me. I value that a lot. That comfort zone, the lack thereof. You know, I try to leave my comfort zone on trips a lot. So that's important
awesome.
To me.
That's awesome.
Maybe when you're 18, we'll go on a trip together. It'd be cool.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
So just finishing up the podcast, I just want to ask one more question.
I talked your ear off. I'm sorry, man.
No, that's fine. I loved it, and this is exactly what I wanted to do for the podcast.
Awesome.
But just with one more question, that would be, leaving one piece of evidence, or wisdom, not evidence.
wisdom. Where did I hide the body?
Wisdom for our listeners and me. What would that be? One piece of wisdom.
One piece of wisdom. So we talked about identity. That's important. We talked about what to value. One thing one thing I can leave you with. I want to leave you with something good. I don't put too much emphasis on results. We did talk about that, though, so I don't want to go back into that. This is a good question. What's something I could leave you with? Follow what you love. We talked about that.
We did go over a lot of this.
We did go over quite a bit, huh? One thing that I think is really important is just going back to that result thing. Just understanding. Oh, here's one. I'm sick of the old school wrestling mentality of winners win, you gotta want it more. You either win or you learn, right? I hate that. Because what if you win, but you wrestle like crap? What if you took two shots, you know, and you rest like crap?
Right.
What if you lose, but you took seven shots and you scored three of them, he just happened to outscore you, right? You probably wrestled better in the loss. But if you only win and learn when you lose, you're not going to learn a lot because you don't lose as much as you win, right?
Right.
You should win and learn, lose and learn. It should always be win, get better, lose, get better. The problem with getting too high on wins is you get really low on losses. I don't mean don't be proud of yourself. I don't mean don't celebrate. That's fine. Get, you know, flex, get pumped up, passion. That's great. But don't think.
Hey guys, this is Jude. Sorry to interrupt Johnny DeJulius' wisdom, but unfortunately, our interview was cut short due to some technical difficulties. Please, if you like the interview and you want more Johnny DeJulius, go follow him on Instagram and Twitter. He's a great guy and an excellent clinician. Here's the wrap-up that Sam and Johnny recorded after this. And thank you guys so much for listening.
And that's a wrap for our second interview podcast. Man, it was a blast talking to you. We talked for over an hour now. Just all things wrestling, mentality, jumping out of planes, jumping out off of buildings, and getting kicked out of the Blue Lagoon.
Oh, yeah. All stuff that people should live by, right? Now, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This is my new favorite podcast. I think it beats Flow Radio Live now for me.
I don't know about that.
No, thank you for having me, though. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope we can get you on sometime later. Just talk about more wrestling, maybe some current wrestling. I was hoping maybe we could get to some other
World Team Trials.
Yeah, World Team Trials.
Yeah, we'll chat. How about we chat post World Team Trials? We'll chat again.
That's a great idea.
Sweet.
We can plan on that.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
Thanks
again,
Johnny.
Me.